Okay, we're in Gemara Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Again, the Mishnah taught us a number of halachas that you get lashed for. And the first one is Bikurim, that the Kohen eats before the Jew reads the Psukim of Arami Ovid Avi. So the Gemara said that this statement of the Mishnah goes like Rabbi Akiva. It's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. And the Chachamim disagree with him and say, no, that the only thing is you have to put down the basket, but you don't have to read the basket. So this is going like Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara says, well, why don't you say it's like Rabbi Shimon as well? The Gemara says, it is, but we wanted to tell you it's also like Rabbi Akiva. Because Rabbi Shimon is a more... the source is more revealed, and everybody knew that source, as we're going to see this morning. Well, Rabbi Akiva was not recorded anyway, it was a student telling us over, so we wanted to say that Rabbi Akiva is not recorded, the student's telling us it's also Rabbi Akiva's position, but Rabbi Shimon is more a clearly written source. So that's where we're going to get to today. Now, that's the Gemara's question. Now, my Reb Shimon, what recorded statement of Reb Shimon shows that he ascribes to this view that putting it down is not enough, but you have to read the psukim of Arami Ovid Avi, and if the kohen eats the bikurim before that, he gets lashed. What's the source for this? Now, what's going to happen now, and this one is going to keep us busy for the next couple sessions, is Rabbi Shimon is going to analyze a pasuk. The pasuk can be learned on a very simple level, and then Rabbi Shimon is going to say, but that's way too obvious, and the Torah doesn't have to tell us this. And every clause is going to teach us something else. That's what's going to happen. So we're going to have to spend first a couple minutes going through the pasuk, just to understand the simple meaning of the pasuk. And then you'll see, as he's gonna do like five little sub categories of going through each clause of the pasuk to teach us something beyond what the simple meaning is. And one of them is regarding Bikurim. That's the main thing, is gonna be the first teaching. The first teaching is all we need. But once we bring the Brisa, we bring the whole Brisa, we bring all the other cases, and then all the arguments and back and forth on that. So the Tanya, we learn in a Brisa, and here's the pasuk that we need. This is the one. Torah is saying where you may not eat certain foods outside of Yerushalayim. It's going to list us a number of foods that you cannot eat them outside Yerushalayim, which suggests that if you ate them outside Yerushalayim, you'd get lashed for it. So Torah says like this, Lo sucha lecho bisharecha. You may not eat in your outlying cities. That means outside of Yerushalayim. What? Masar degancha, the miser of your grain. And this is talking about miser sheni. Miser sheni has to be in Yerushalayim. You may not eat miser sheni in your outlying cities. Of it, whether it's the guncha, the siroshecha, yitzarecha, grain, wine, oil, etc., meiser sheni cannot be eaten outside Yerushalayim. What else cannot be eaten outside Yerushalayim? Ubecharos bekorcha vitzonecha, and also the firstborn of your cattle and flocks, which goes to the kohen, unless there's a mum or something else. But either way, that bechor cannot be eaten outside of Yerushalayim. What else? Vechol nidoreha asher tidor, v'nidvosecha, and all of your vow offerings that you vow, and your donated offerings cannot be eaten outside Yerushalayim. The Brisa will tell us which specific ones that's referring to. And also, utrumas yotcha, and the truma of your hand. Now, that truma of your hand is not the same as truma. Truma, regular truma, is that first 2% you give to the kohen. That can be eaten anywhere. Trumas yotcha is not referring to truma. We'll find out in a minute. It's going to be referring to bikurim. Okay, we're going to show you how in a minute. So the Torah basically said there's about four or five items on this list you cannot eat outside of Yerushalayim. Now, what Reb Shimon's going to do in his clever analysis is he's going to analyze the pasuk going backwards. And by going backwards, he's able to deduce novel insights in the text. You'll see why he bothers doing that. And he's going to tell us that this pasuk has to be understood well beyond the simple meaning of the text. Again, the simple meaning is saying, you can't eat Maaser Sheni, you can't eat a Bechor, a firstborn, you can't eat certain vow offerings, you can't eat Bikurim outside of Yerushalayim. Okay, that's the simple meaning. Now, Reb Shimon's going to analyze things backwards, and only because he goes backwards are you able to make the analysis which he makes. So we're going to take each lesson slowly over here. Comes along Reb Shimon, is looking at the last clause first. That's the way he's working at it. What does it mean, utrumas yodcha, the truma of your hand? If it meant regular truma, just call it truma. Why do you call it the truma of your hand? She says, elu bikurim, this is bikurim. Now, where does he come up with that? Very simple, because look what the Torah says about bikurim. It says, "V'lokach hakohen hatene miyodecha." The kohen will take the basket from your hand. Regular truma isn't discussed that way. So only by bikurim is there a reference to your hand. The kohen's given from your hand, right? So
that, not putting it down, you have to take it from.
But the Torah bothers to use that word miyadech, which is totally not necessary. It could have said v'lokach hakohen atene. He takes the basket,
yeah.
Right? So Rashi also explains that the verse can't be referring to actual truma, since it deals with items that must be brought to Jerusalem, and there's no such requirement for regular truma. Nevertheless, by describing bikurim as the truma of your hand, the Torah implies that bikurim are in some way analogous to truma, and we learn from this that bikurim may be only eaten by kohanim. That's how it's like truma. Truma is only eaten by kohanim, so bikurim, which is called trumas yodcha, is only eaten by bikurim, but by using the word yodcha, now you can understand when the pasuk says trumas yodcha that we started off with, it's referring to bikurim. Okay, now you understand why when it says trumas yodcha, it's not regular truma. It's talking about bikurim, and it says you may not eat what maaser sheni, you may not eat a bechor, you may not eat certain vow offerings, you may not eat bikurim outside of Yerushalayim. At this point, Reb Shimon now makes the analysis now. Amar Reb Shimon says, Ma bo zel alamdenu, what is the pasuk trying to teach us over here? So you would say, I'll tell you what it's teaching us, we can't eat bikurim outside of Yerushalayim. What's wrong with that?
Right.
He's saying, well, there's a plenty wrong with that, because I would know that without a pasuk. Now, if I know that without a pasuk, then what is it coming to tell me? How would I know it without a pasuk? Well, let's look what we already know in the beginning of the pasuk. Torah says we can't eat maaser sheni outside Yerushalayim. Reb Shimon's going to demonstrate in one moment that if I know you can't eat maaser sheni outside Yerushalayim, I know already from a kal vachomer you can't eat bikurim outside Yerushalayim, and I wouldn't need the pasuk. Therefore, it's got to be teaching me something else. How would I know this from a kal vachomer? This is what he's going to say. So what does the case of bikurim out of Yerushalayim mean to say? So if it's the simple pshat, hello, im la'ochlam chutz l'choma, if the Torah is coming to prohibit from us that we may not eat bikurim outside the walls of Yerushalayim, if that's the only thing the pasuk's meaning, I mean the simple rendering of the text, I wouldn't need that. Because kal vachomer mimaiser hakal, I could deduce that from a kal vachomer from maaser sheni, which is a much more lenient halacha. And we still have this stringency you have to in Yerushalayim. What's the kal? Uma Meiser Hakal. We know by Meiser Sheni, which is less strict. We'll see in a minute why. Ochlan chutz lachom aloka. If you eat it outside of the walls of Yerushalayim, you get lashed. How do I know you get lashed? Because that's the very first clause of the pasuk. This is why he has to go backwards. Once I know from the first clause of the pasuk, you can't eat mice or sheni outside Yerushalayim. I already know that from the first clause. What's the fifth clause telling me that Bikurim can't be eaten outside the walls? We're going to see in a minute. There's a kavu chomer, which is say why I would know that for sure. Okay, Bikurim. Now Bikurim, which is the last clause. Lo kol shekei, would that not be all the more so? So it doesn't have to teach us this. Right now, the Gemara is not telling you what the kal v'chomer is. You'll just have faith in his statement. Later, the Gemara is going to go through this whole braisa and go point by point by point, knocking it down. Right now, you just have to understand what it's saying. So there is a kal v'chomer, which the Gemara is going to later say what the kal v'chomer is. We're just quoting a braisa of Reb Shimon now. Shimon's saying a braisa. He's saying, well, this is how I understand the pasuk. The last clause of Bikurim can't be telling me the simple pshat, you can't eat it outside Yerushalayim, because the first clause of Meiser Sheni already says you can't, and Meiser Sheni is much less strict in halacha, and yet it has the stringency you have to eat in Yerushalayim. So Bikurim, which is more strict, all the more so you can't eat Yerushalayim. So I don't need the pasuk to tell me that. So what's the clause doing? Hello, Bahakosa. Therefore, the text, by saying it, must be telling you something else. Elolo oichel mi bikurim ad shelo kara leim. But to prohibit you from eating the kohen, from eating bikurim, before the Jew reads the psukim on it. That's where he deduces it. Again, the Torah lists four or five cases that you may not eat outside Yerushalayim. The first one is Meiser Sheni. Good. Clear. The last one is Bikurim. Well, if I already know that Meiser Sheni cannot be eaten outside Yerushalayim, then all the more, which is a much less strict type of halacha, Meiser Sheni. First of all, Meiser Sheni, anyone can eat it. Bikurim already has a stringency. Only a kohen can eat it. That's one way of looking at the kal v'chomer. So if Bikurim is stricter, all the more so you'd have to eat it in Yerushalayim as well. Okay? So then what do I need to tell me you can't eat Bikurim outside of Yerushalayim? If you already know from Meiser Sheni. So must be coming to teach me something else. So just like we know that Meiser Sheni, there's a restriction on how you can eat it. The restriction is where. So we got to come up with a new restriction for Bikurim. And the restriction is you can't eat it until Psukim are read. It's got to teach you something. So it's going to teach you that. And we're going to learn more than that. Now it's usher, shuloka, you're going to get lashed. So therefore, we see the Reb Shimon considers recitation of the verses to be essential to the fulfillment of the Bikurim procedure and maintains that one who eats of them prior to recitation incurs malchus. Now, very important rule here. Scripture teaches this law through the device of... Now, although you said this morning... Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Bishloisha Esrei Midos HaTorah Nidreshes Bahem. There's 13 hermeneutic principles to deduce things. There's another brisa where another rabbi says there's 30. There's 30 ways to deduce. And this is the 12th of the 30. It's called Im Eino Inyan. That's what it's called. The device is called Im Eino Inyan. If it's unnecessary in this context... Going back to an older note, the Torah gives us... I don't want to bother with that. That's not going to help us. Okay, let's go back. So it's a concept of Oeno Inyan. If there's no need to say it here, it must be teaching you something else. So since the Torah's specific mention of prohibition against eating Bikurim outside Yerushalayim is unnecessary... That verse must be understood as alluding to another prohibition that can reasonably be applied to Bikurim. And logic dictates it seems to prohibit the eating before its essential procedure is completed, which according to Rav Shimon is before the verses are recited over it. The sages agree with Rav Shimon's exposition to a certain degree, but know that the essential procedure is completed when the Bikurim are placed by the altar. You don't have to yet read the Psukim. The context which Rav Shimon implies this mention of Bikurim is actually analogous to the simple context of the verse. For the verse sets forth a parameter in space for eating Ma'aser Sheni, meaning it can't be eaten outside Yerushalayim. Shimon understands the subsequent reference to Bikurim setting forth a parameter in time for eating. It may not be eaten before its procedure is completed. Now, all of Reb Shimon's subsequent explanations of Brisa follow the same pattern. As far as we're concerned, we only need this part of the Brisa. We could close up shop right now. Because how did we start off this Gemara today? We had a statement, if you eat Bikurim before the Psukim are read, you get lashed. The Gemara says, oh, that's like Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara says, well, why don't you tell me it's like Reb Shimon? Also, oh, Reb Shimon, that's expressly stated. We just want to tell you also, Rabbi Akiva. Okay, where do we know Reb Shimon expressly stated it? This is it, right here. So we got what we need. But we can't just only quote the first part of the Brisa. They're going to quote the whole Brisa now. Mm-hmm. So now this is all really going off the topic now. All right? The topic ends sort of here. This is Reb Shimon. Boom. And now we're going to go down the page, up the next side of the page, going through the whole Brisa, and asking all kinds of questions on Reb Shimon. So I don't want to get lost in the forest over here. We already got what we needed. We have our Mishnah. You eat before the guy reads the Psukim, you're lashed. Who's that like? Rabbi Akiva and Reb Shimon. Done. We have the source. But now let's bring the whole teaching of Reb Shimon.
What's Maser HaKal?
It's more lenient. Kal, as opposed to the Maser Sheni, is a more lenient type of Avera than the Avera of eating Bikurim. That's his more. So therefore, if I already know you can't eat it outside of Yerushalayim, by Maser, I already know Bikurim you can't.
Okay.
Okay, yeah?
So just a couple of questions. So one is, we say Truma Biyad. So
it's reference to Bikurim.
Right. But we say it's more stricter
than Ma'aser Sheni.
So therefore it has to be eaten in Yerushalayim. You didn't need to tell us that.
Right.
But if we use the word Truma, we could say Truma itself, regular Truma, doesn't have to be eaten in Yerushalayim. You can just...
I understand.
Anywhere.
So but this is not regular Truma.
But we can use the word truma and say it's just like other truma, therefore you needed the pasuk.
Okay, so hang on. So we have not yet said what the actual Kavah Homer is.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's
we haven't. I just kind of let out a little.
No.
So what's going to happen when we finish this pricing, we're going to say, what are the Kavah Homers? Then they're going to say the Kalvachomers. Then they're going to ask questions on those Kalvachomers. So they're ready. And they're going to ask different questions than you ask. So the Gemara is going to take every... First, we're going to hear what every Kalvachomer is. Then the Gemara is going to knock out and say, I disagree with all those Kalvachomers. So it's kind of doing what you're doing. But they're going to ask different questions, maybe stronger questions, what you're asking.
Okay, so the other question is, okay, say we go with his Kalvachomer. So why does it have to say the Sukkim before? Why couldn't it be somebody else?
It has to be some kind of restriction.
So the coin has
there aren't a lot of... So once, just like there's a restriction of place... They want to find another restriction. We already have the restriction of place. So what other restrictions can we have? Torah says you give it to the kohen. So I can't say it's for a kohen after Yisrael. Torah clearly says kohen. So what other restriction could there be? It must be a restriction in time. And the time is when, if you're doing it too prematurely. So he's saying this is too prematurely. Now we'd have to go to further analyze in other Gemaras why he didn't hold like the Chachamim, who say if you just put it down is enough. That's another machlokas that needs another exposition. You're just opening up the can of worms larger. There has to be some restriction. So we only can restrict things in terms of... There's only three types of restrictions. Place, person, and time.
So So time could be, put it on the
mizbeach. Okay, so now then we're going to have a separate machlokes to see why Rav Shimon says it's reading, while Chum say mizbeach, from other psukim. So you know there's a restriction of time. Question is, well, what time? Okay, we'd have to go to a different analysis of different psukim to see why he says the time is the reading. And Chum says it's just the time is the placement. So that's, you're thinking good, but more has to unfold.
Okay.
Has a lot to unfold, yeah?
Well, just to clarify here, it seems to me that the onus of saying the psukim is on the
Jew. The Jew, Torah says the Jew has to read it.
So the Kohen has to listen to that, otherwise he won't know that it's...
Well, or at least know that it's been read.
How does he know?
Guy tells him, I read. He can say, did you read the psukim? Yes. We assume he's not going to lie to the Kohen, right?
So
if the guy puts it down and the Kohen says, did you read the psukim? He says, yes. Which psukim? These psukims. That's okay.
So
Kohen doesn't necessarily have to hear it.
Specific one.
These six psukim or whatever, Arami Ovidavi, right in the beginning of Parshas Kisavo. It's right there.
So you have to remember,
it was probably a busy time. There was probably a cacophony of people reading psukim. It's like, imagine someone walked into the shul and Erev Rosh Hashanah during Ataras Nadarim.
Yeah.
But you just hear a buzz in the room.
That's right.
Right? You can remember, they came in the parade. It usually wasn't one guy coming in.
It's just one guy.
It probably was hundreds of thousands of people coming in over there. All right, so there's like a million people coming over. It could be a lineup, and guys, I'm in a rush. Can I get out? Okay, so you 10 read the psukim, and I'll. So it's not necessarily Kohen heard every word that you said. The main thing is that you said your psukim, and I don't think a Jew would lie and
purposely
mess up the Kohen and not read it and say I read it just so he gets lashed. I don't think that would be. So therefore that's fine. All right, so we looked at the last clause, analyzed the last clause, and assumed it can't be the simple meaning of eating it out of Yerushalayim, but rather it means eating before the psukim are read. Now what Rishim is going to do is going to go to the second last clause. He's working his way backwards. What is it's the third last clause. It's not in order, for sure not in order. One second, let me just make sure which one this was. Trumas Yot, Trumas. Fine. Now, v'nidvo secha, and your gift offerings, okay, that was what it said in the pasuk. You can't eat that out of Yerushalayim, all right, your donation offerings. So what is this? Zu toda ushlamim. This is talking about the korban toda, that's the Thanksgiving korban if you were saved from a dangerous situation, or a regular shlamim. You want to give a gift to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for no other reason, giving a gift. And these are usually brought as nidavos, donative offerings. You're not obliged. A donation means I don't have an obligation. They're the general donations. I mean, there could be a mincha and things like that. But generally, if you're asking, what is a donated korban to the Beis HaMikdash that can be eaten? It's a tod and a shlamim. All right. The owner voluntarily consecrates animal as an offering and bears no liability to replace it. Remember, nedava means I'm giving this one. Not I hereby vow I'm going to give a shlamim, but this animal's the shlamim. Both the Torah cases are in some case obligatory, but they are commonly referred to as voluntarily. Sometimes some shlamim are obligation, but the majority of shlamim are voluntary. So we have a new rule. So what do you think the pasuk simply means? A korban toda and a korban shlamim must be eaten in Yerushalayim. That's true.
Yeah.
Korban toda, so that's katshei kalim. Remember we talked about katshei kalim?
Yeah.
Katshei kalim can be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what the pasuk's saying. You may not eat outside Yerushalayim your voluntary gifts. That refers to a korban toda, a korban shlamim. Is that what you think it means? Amar Rav Shimon, ma bozel lelamdeinu, what is this pasuk teaching us? If it's just the simple meaning, im la'och l'chus l'chama, if it's telling us you can't eat a tod or shlamim outside Yerushalayim, as the simple meaning suggests, why do I keep hitting that? Kal v'chaymer Meiser. Again, we have a kal v'chaymer from Meiser Sheni. In other words, again, Korban Shlomim is a stricter law than Maaser Sheni. Doesn't say why right now. You just accept it as a fact. It's a stricter law. Okay? And that, what is, whatever the Kal V'Chomer mentioned above by the Bikurim can also apply to Shlomim and Torah, since these two are more stringent than Maaser Sheni. Look, the Gemara will elaborate on 17b what the stringency is. But right now, just accept it that a Korban Shlomim is stricter than Maaser Sheni. So, so what is the pasuk coming to teach me? Can't be eating outside Yerushalayim. I know that from a Kal V'Chomer Maaser Sheni. Another time constraint: if you eat the korban tereshlamim before the blood was sprinkled in the processing of the animal, that's another time related. In other words, by bikurim, the only time related thing can be either placing it down or reading the psukim. What's the time related? Well, you're not going to eat the animal before it's shechted. I mean, I don't have to tell you that, because if you don't shecht it, it's not, you can't eat it. Oh wait, so what's the next thing you... Well, the general assumption is once the blood is sprinkled, now God got his portion, as it were. Now, if you would eat that korban before the sprinkling, you get lashed. And that's what the pasuk is coming to teach you, shehuloka, that he gets lashed. The essence of the animal offering in its blood avoda, which culminates in zrika, throwing or applying the blood to the altar. This procedure affects acceptance of the offering and the atonement it affords. That is the critical step. Through the device of, again, if unnecessary in its context, reason that the superfluous mention of donative offerings in this verse alludes that the meat of the Torah Shalom may not be eaten before Srika is performed. This is the only possible application of the new unspecified prohibition. Since the Torah permits the meat of Torah Shalom offerings to non-Kohanim, there's no logical application of this verse except to prohibit its consumption before the essential avodah is performed. That's the only thing that you could prohibit. If, remember, it's either time, place, or person. We can't say, well, it's coming to tell you a Yisrael can't eat it. No, Torah says the Yisrael can eat a shlomo. Torah says you can't eat it Yerushalayim. So what are you trying to teach me? We took care of person, we've taken care of place. So time. So the earliest you can do this once God has said that the korban has been accepted. Thus, there adds the stringency of a negative commandment, which is punishable by Malchus, to the previously known positive commandment to eat of the Torah and Shlomim only after Zrika. There is a positive commandment that says you eat it after Zrika. It says, V'dam zivachecha yishafecha mizbach Hashem. The blood of your offerings shall be poured on the altar. That's the Zrika, and then you shall eat it. That's the positive mitzvah. There's a positive mitzvah. When you bring a shlomim, you have a positive mitzvah to eat the shlomim after the blood is sprinkled. Didn't tell me, what if I eat it before? Maybe I only just didn't do the positive mitzvah. How do you know I get lashed? There's a negative prohibition. This pasuk is like a negative prohibition. Wait a minute, only says I can't eat it outside Yerushalayim. Well, I don't need to be told you can't eat it out of Yerushalayim, because I know that from a Kal V'Chomer Maaser Sheni. So it's got to be telling me something. The only thing you tell me is I get a lav for eating it too prematurely. That's how we work step two backwards. Okay? Now, ubacharos. What about firstborns? We're going back in the pasuk. What does it mean? Bacharos. Zabachar. That's a firstborn animal that's given to the Kohen. It's got to be eaten in Yerushalayim. So Amar Reb Shimon comes along, Reb Shimon again, and says, Ma bo zeh lil amdeinu, what's this pasuk teaching us? Again, im lo chlam chutz l'choma, if it comes to teach me to eat outside the wall of Yerushalayim, Kal V'Chomer mi Maaser. It's a Kal V'Chomer from Maaser. But now, you could say, okay, I know it's Kal V'Chomer Maaser. Well, maybe it's coming to tell me I can't eat this before it gets sprinkled. Well, no, because I already know you can't do it by a tod and a shlomim, and I'm going to have a Kal V'Chomer on that. And if you want to say im lifnei zrik, if you say, well, you know what it's telling me? I can't eat the bechor before it's sprinkled. Well, I already know that. That's why going backwards makes this work very nicely. Kal V'Chomer mi tod and shlomim. We're going to see that a bechor is stricter than a tod and a shlomim, that already we know you can't eat it before the zrika. Right? We just did that. So what's it coming to teach me? Elo ba'kasav elo ochal min abachor afilu la'acher shricha. It's coming to teach that if someone other than a non-Kohen who eats from a b'chor, even after the shricha, shuloki it's lasher. Now we're prohibiting the person. Now again, elsewhere, Torah teaches only in the language of a positive commandment that consumption of b'chorim is restricted to Kohanim. It says positively give it to the Kohen. What if a Jew eats it? A regular Jew. I don't know that a Jew's not allowed to eat it. I know we have the positive mitzvah has not been performed, but I don't know it's negative that a regular Israel can't eat it. In Devar Midbar, it states that all the meat of a choron shall be treated like the breast and thigh of a shlomen, meaning the portion that's designated for the Kohanim. According to the non-Kohen, were to eat the meat of a Bechor offering, he would violate the positive commandment because it was reserved to Kohen. But he didn't violate a negative because there's no negative commandment.
No,
but now that we have this extra teaching here that you have to eat the Bechor in Yerushalayim, but I don't need that. Well, maybe it's coming to teach me if I eat it before the blood is sprinkled. Well, I know that from a Tod and a Shlomim. So what's left to teach me? That if the Yisrael eats it, now there's an extra lav that you get lashed for it.
The Jew,
not the Kohen.
Okay.
We know the Kohen is supposed to eat it, but we don't know if a Jew eats it, he gets lashed.
Uh-huh.
There's no lav. So that's what this is coming to teach us. Okay, one more to go. Keep going backwards. Bekorcha v'tzoncha. What does it mean when it says your bakor and your tzon, your sheep and cattle? Zu chatas v'asham. That's about a korban chatas and a korban asham. Those are kabonas. Those are kachikachim now. That's not kachikalim. Kachikachim. That kohanim can eat part of them. That's what it means, bakorcha v'tzoncha, because generally it comes from bakor and tzon. That's chatas or an asham. Again, it must refer to these offerings since they are not mentioned anywhere else in the verse and all other animal offerings are already mentioned. The Meiser and Pesach offerings are also mentioned, but these are essentially the same as the Shlomim. There isn't anything else but Chatos and Asham. So what's that coming to teach you? Well, I guess you can't eat outside Yerushalayim. No, we already know that. And it's also not going to teach us Zrikas before the Zrika. It's also not going to teach us of a non-coin. So it's got to teach us something else. Amar Reb Shimon, Ma Bozel Elam Deino. What is this coming to teach us? Im Lochon Chutzlo. It's eating outside the wall. We know that from Meister Shani, you can't do it.
Yeah.
If it's coming to tell me Milif Neisri Gavis before the sprinkling of blood, Kavachomer Mitod or Shlamim, it's stricter than a carbon Tod or Shlamim they can't do before the Shrika. And if it's Im La'achar Shigin, it's for a non Kohen to eat it after the sprinkling, Kavachomer B'chor, we know that from B'chor.
Right.
You see why working backwards makes it work. Went forward. I didn't know these things yet. Hala ba kasav ela la but la achal la ochal mechatas va ashem afilu la achar zrika chutz la kloim. This comes to teach you that if you eat a chatas and ashem even after it's been sprinkled, but outside the curtains, shuloka, that you get lashed. What's it teaching me? He eats from a chatas. Oh, even a Kohen. Even a Kohen outside the curtains. That means outside the courtyard, but still in Yerushalayim.
That's outside the curtains.
Right? That I don't know. I know I can't eat it outside Yerushalayim. I know a non-Kohen can't eat it. But what if the Kohen eats it? But he just eats it just outside the chatzer. Ah, shehu loka, that he gets lashed.
I thought it was going to say if you eat the portions that go to the coin, you get knocked.
Well, we already, but we know that from a Kavachomer already from the one before.
Yeah.
That was one before if the Yisrael eats that portion.
Yeah.
That was by Bechor.
Yeah.
We know that from Bechor.
Yeah.
Okay, there's one more to go, but we got to stop. There's one last one, Nidorecha, Zu'ola. Okay, so, but we did four out of the five. But you see the direction how this is going. Once we finish that, then the Gemara is going to analyze each and every clause and question each and every clause.